Imagine for a second that you want to start a catering business.
Okay.
In the traditional system, just to get your foot in the door, you need like a $50,000 small business loan, a commercial kitchen lease, and a massive stack of municipal permits.
Right. You need permission from banks, landlords, regulators, basically everyone, before you ever serve a single plate of food.
Exactly. Now imagine bypassing every single one of those gatekeepers. Imagine launching that exact same business using nothing but your smartphone, artificial intelligence, and a high-tech outdoor grill.
I mean, it sounds like science fiction, or maybe like a very aggressive tech pitch in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it really does. But it's actually the core premise of a deeply unconventional document we're unpacking today. We aren't looking at a tech company's roadmap. We are looking at a corporate manifesto from, of all things, an outdoor gear brand.
Yeah, which is just wild.
Right. Usually when you read material from an outdoor company, you expect like a 20-page defense of moisture-wicking fabric.
Oh, yeah, or a romantic plea to save a national park.
Right.
Exactly. Or buy a lighter tent for your weekend escape into the woods. It's very familiar territory. But today's source material throws that entirely out the window. It isn't trying to sell you a weekend escape. It is pitching a total ground-up restructuring of the American socioeconomic system.
Which is quite the pivot from camping gear.
It really is. Welcome to today's deep dive. We got our hands on an exclusive April 2026 memo called Memo 007. It was written by Mike Isaacs, the founder of an outdoor gear company called Timber Outdoor.
Timber with a Y, right?
Yep, TYMMBER. And the mission for our deep dive today is to explore a breathtakingly bold argument. This memo claims the 60-year-old American social safety net has completely failed, and it needs to be replaced by an AI-powered era of what the author calls individual sovereignty.
Before we dive in, it's worth noting for you listening, this memo touches the absolute third rail of modern politics.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it delves into government welfare, systemic poverty, the national debt, and just the fundamental value of our massive institutions.
Right.
So we want to be very clear that we aren't here to endorse or condemn Mike Isaacs's worldview today.
Right. We aren't taking a political side at all.
Exactly. We are simply here to be your neutral guides through a genuinely fascinating, highly controversial piece of corporate strategy. We're just breaking down the logic and the claims presented in the text.
All right, so with the ground rules set, let's look at the actual problem the author claims to be solving. To understand this outdoor company's radical proposed solution, we have to start where they start, which is an indictment of the current system.
Right.
The memo argues that after 60 years and tens of trillions of dollars in spending, the U.S. social safety net has not achieved its actual goal. But Isaacs defines that failure very specifically.
Yeah, he says the safety net kept people alive. Like, it successfully prevented freefall, but it completely failed to generate lift.
Right. And he boils this entire incredibly complex socioeconomic issue down to one single metric, which he calls a $40,000 delta.
And the text is incredibly rigid about this number. The author divides the economic landscape into two distinct states. On one end, you have what he calls the despair economy.
Which sounds pretty grim.
It does. And this is defined as anyone making under $20,000 a year. It's characterized by poverty, welfare dependency, and what he calls suppressed contribution.
Okay, and the other end.
On the other end, you have the sovereign median household. This is defined as making over $60,000 a year, and it's characterized by active economic contribution and total self-sufficiency.
So the mathematical distance between a life of managed dependency and a life of sovereignty is exactly $40,000.
Exactly. That is the delta.
Yeah.
The author argues that moving a person across that specific $40,000 gap is the only metric that actually matters. He claims every other policy debate is just noise.
Okay, let's unpack this. It sounds like he's saying the government spent the last 60 years building a massive, highly reliable parachute to stop people from hitting the ground. But what people actually needed all along was a jetpack to fly upward.
That's a really good analogy.
But, you know, I have to push back on the premise here. Is it truly fair to criticize a safety net just because it didn't magically turn everyone into a self-sufficient entrepreneur?
Right, I see what you mean.
Like, Isaacs himself admits in the memo that preventing freefall is a humane and legitimate objective. If a parachute stops you from dying, it did its job, right? Why indict the parachute for not being a jetpack?
What's fascinating here is that the author actually agrees with your premise to a certain extent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the memo explicitly states that the failure isn't born out of malicious intent. the people who built the social welfare architecture were not villains. I mean, many of them were brilliant, well-meaning policymakers. But the critique is about the inherent mechanical limitations of what a safety net actually provides. The author draws a very sharp, uncompromising line between consumption and production.
Consumption versus production. Tell me more about how the memo separates those two concepts, because they sound a bit abstract.
Well, it's grounded in reality. The safety net, by design, solely addresses consumption. It provides food assistance, subsidized shelter, Medicaid for healthcare, vouchers for childcare.
Right, the essentials.
Exactly. These are essential services to keep someone alive. But the memo argues that the moment those services end, or, you know, the funding gets cut, the individual is economically in the exact same vulnerable place they started.
Ah, I see. They survived, but they haven't moved forward.
Right. They have consumed resources to survive, but they haven't built anything that lasts.
Mm-hmm.
Production, on the other hand, is about ownership.
Okay.
It's about building a compounding asset.
Okay.
So mastering a rare skill, owning a piece of equipment, building a small business, something that actively generates more value next year than it did this year.
So the memo's thesis is that the safety net funded the floor of consumption, but did absolutely nothing to build a ladder of production.
Spot on. That's exactly it.
Which brings us to a really massive question. If the goal is simply to build that ladder, like to close that $40,000 gap, why haven't the tens of trillions of dollars in government and nonprofit spending over the last 60 years achieved it?
That's the million-dollar, or I guess trillion-dollar question.
Right. You would think with that much money, someone would have built a few ladders. But the memo points the finger directly at structural design. It blames the very nature of institutions themselves.
Yes. The memo argues that institutions, by their very biological nature, are built to perpetuate themselves. It's a concept often referred to as the bureaucracy paradox.
The bureaucracy paradox.
Yeah, think about it mechanically. If a massive government program or a 1,000-person nonprofit actually solves the root cause of poverty in a given city, it essentially eliminates its own budget for the next fiscal year.
Oh, wow.
Right? If a bureaucracy achieves its mission, it no longer needs its staff.
So the author is essentially arguing that the very experts hired to fix poverty are structurally incentivized to keep people dependent on them.
That's the argument.
That is a staggering indictment of the entire nonprofit and government sector. I mean, that implies that millions of well-intentioned people working in social services are part of a machine that actively suppresses the people they are trying to help.
It is heavy. But the author is very careful to frame this as a structural organizational reality rather than some grand smoky room conspiracy theory.
Okay, so it's not malicious.
Right. It's not that individual social workers want people to stay poor. It's that the system they work within is designed for management, not resolution. The memo refers to this phenomenon as the scholastic trap.
The scholastic trap. Okay, what does that actually mean in practice? How does it trap someone?
Think of it like being a permanent passenger in a taxi.
Okay.
The institution is the driver. They navigate the complex roads of welfare applications, housing subsidies, job placement programs. They get you to your destination, so you survive.
Right.
But because you are forced to sit in the back seat, you never get behind the wheel. You never learn how to navigate the roads yourself.
Ah, so you're totally dependent on the driver.
Exactly. The institutional belief is that complex human problems require credentialed experts to manage them. Under this model, the person experiencing poverty is treated as a subject to be administered rather than an agent to be activated.
Wow. Subject to be administered.
Yeah. Over 60 years, this approach has supposedly trained entire populations to simply wait in the back seat for expert help.
And the memo put some incredibly heavy numbers behind this structural failure. It claims this expert dependency costs $10.3 trillion in annual lost economic contribution from 268 million Americans.
Which is just a massive number.
It is. It even ties this directly to a $9.1 trillion infrastructure repair backlog. It argues that a more productive, activated nation wouldn't have let its roads, bridges, and power grids crumble.
Yeah, that's a bold leap.
We really have to pause and digest the scale of those numbers. He is essentially blaming a collapsing bridge in Ohio on the structural design of the welfare state.
It's a breathtakingly systemic view of the economy. The logic is that if citizens are treated as passive subjects who just consume services, rather than active producers who build wealth and pay robustly into the tax base, well, the entire national structure begins to sag under the weight of that dependency.
because the math just doesn't work out.
Right. You simply don't have the generated wealth required to maintain a modern superpower.
Okay, so if institutions are supposedly this massive roadblock to progress, historically, an individual still needed them.
Sure.
If you wanted to start a business 20 years ago, you couldn't just bypass the system. You needed a bank for capital. You needed a corporation to reach a large audience. You needed a legal agency for contracts.
Exactly. You needed permission.
So if the scholastic trap has existed for 60 years, what has suddenly changed to allow an individual to cross this $40,000 gap today without those institutions?
According to the memo, the answer is the AI inflection point.
Mm.
Artificial intelligence is presented as the great gatekeeper bypass.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
The memo declares that AI has just handed every single individual on Earth the capabilities that used to belong exclusively to massive organizations. The author says a single person with a laptop, an internet connection, and the willingness to learn now has access to the equivalent of a Fortune 500 C-suite right in their pocket.
Which completely flips the script.
It does. But how does that actually work mechanically for someone trapped in that $20,000 despair economy?
Let's go back to your catering business example from the beginning. 10 years ago, if someone making $20,000 wanted to start catering, they hit a wall of expensive gatekeepers.
Right.
They needed to pay a lawyer $300 an hour to draft client contracts. They needed to hire a marketing firm to figure out local demographics. They needed an accountant to structure their LLC. Those costs alone kept them trapped.
Yeah, you're stopped before you even begin.
Oh.
Today, according to the memo, that same person uses an AI to generate a bulletproof, localized catering contract in about 4 seconds for free.
Wow.
They use AI to analyze local foot traffic and event data to see exactly where the highest demand for food will be on a Tuesday afternoon. They use AI to instantly generate a branded marketing campaign. The friction of starting has dropped to near zero.
That is wild. The gap between what you can do alone in your living room and what a corporation can do with a staff of 20 and a massive budget has never been smaller.
Exactly. Hmm. If we connect this to the bigger picture, AI removes the need for permission. In the past, you needed permission from an employer to earn a wage, from a lender to get capital.
Right.
Now, you just ask the AI to help you build the asset yourself.
And this is why the memo is incredibly emphatic that this is not a technology story. It is a sovereignty story.
Yes.
The author claims this AI inflection point is the most significant expansion of individual economic opportunity since the Industrial Revolution. It completely alters the balance of power between the individual and the institution.
Which is a huge statement. But it's one thing to have the tools. I mean, it's another thing to actually use them to cross that $40,000 gap.
Right. Having a C-suite in your pocket doesn't magically put 60 grand in your bank account. You still need a map to get out of the woods.
And that is exactly why the memo lays out a precise 3-step blueprint to achieve this sovereignty. And crucially, Isaacs insists this path does not require a genius tech idea, and it doesn't require a venture capital check. It is designed for the everyday person.
Okay, let's walk through how this blueprint actually works. Step one is acquiring a marketable skill, but the memo specifically says not an academic degree.
Right, no traditional college.
It advocates for a capability that solves a real-world problem and takes about 6 months to master. We're talking about content creation, trade work, logistics, digital marketing. To make this happen, Timber Outdoor actually created an educational arm called Timber U.
The contrast here is key. A traditional 4-year institution might cost you $100,000 in debt and leave you with theoretical knowledge. TimberU is designed to teach market readiness over academic completion.
It's a direct rejection of the credential-obsessed scholastic trap.
Exactly. They want you learning from people who have actually built profitable businesses rather than professors who have only studied them. Once you have a skill that someone is willing to pay for, you move to step two, which is a platform.
And the platform is literally just your smartphone. It's about reaching customers directly, bypassing the middlemen.
Yep.
The memo mentions something called the Franklin Library, which is a knowledge platform they built for creators. The core mechanical idea here is owning your audience. Because if you own your audience, like if you have a direct line to the people who buy your service, you can never be deplatformed by a tech giant, and you never have to ask an employer for a shift.
Which brings us to the third and final step of the blueprint, which the author argues is actually the most difficult part of the entire journey, a community. To facilitate this, they created the Sovereign Circle and the Timber Marketplace. But the memo states that the economic shift of learning a skill is easy compared to the psychological shift required to become sovereign.
I really have to push back on this third step. Why is the psychological shift highlighted as the hardest part?
You don't buy it.
I mean, is it really harder to change your mindset than it is to build a profitable business from scratch in a highly competitive economy? That feels a bit dramatic to me.
It sounds dramatic until you bring back our taxi analogy regarding the scholastic trap. Think about the deep psychological conditioning involved.
Okay.
If you have been administered by institutions your entire life, told when to show up to school, what to study, how much you are allowed to earn on your shift, and what government services you qualify for, you have unconsciously absorbed the identity of a passenger.
Yeah, wow. I see where you're going with this.
Yeah. Seeing yourself as an active agent, the actual driver of your own economic output, requires a massive identity overhaul.
Ah, I get it now. You can't just wake up one morning, grab an AI tool, and shed decades of conditioning. You are still mentally sitting in the backseat.
Precisely. You need a community of people who have already made that transition to normalize this new identity of self-determination. If everyone around you is waiting for an institution to fix their lives, you will too. The community proves that this sovereignty isn't a fantasy, but a practical, lived reality.
So we've talked a lot about theory, blueprints, and AI, but this brings us to the most fascinating pivot in the entire document. Because this theory sounds incredible for a Silicon Valley software startup or, you know, a libertarian think tank.
Sure.
But Timber Outdoor is ostensibly a company that makes physical outdoor products. How on earth do they execute this philosophy? Are they selling outdoor gear or are they selling business-in-a-box starter kits disguised as outdoor gear?
That is the brilliance of their physical manifestation of this philosophy. They are doing both. Yeah. The memo reveals that Timber's physical products are explicitly designed as tools of sovereignty. They aren't just camping accessories. They are attempting to literally manufacture the physical ladder out of the $40,000 delta.
The examples in the memo are where this gets incredibly real. Let's look at a product they call the RAAK.
RAAK, right?
Yes, RAAK. To the untrained eye, it looks like a high-end outdoor grill. But the memo says it's absolutely not a grill. It is a mobile kitchen platform. The mechanical function of the RAAK is to allow a person to launch a catering operation, a pop-up restaurant, or a farmer's market stand without ever needing a commercial lease or a health department-approved brick-and-mortar kitchen.
That's brilliant.
You use AI to find the demand, and you use the RAAK to supply the food, entirely bypassing the restaurant industry's massive financial gatekeepers.
And then they scale that concept up with the casita.
Yeah.
It's framed as a deployable living system.
Yeah.
It's not just a fancy tent for a weekend trip. It is designed for people who want to live anywhere and not be tied to a traditional address or a 30-year bank mortgage. Think about how that solves a massive economic vulnerability.
How so?
Well, if the main factory in your town closes and the local economy tanks, a traditional homeowner is trapped. Their house loses value and they can't leave.
Because they're anchored to the debt.
Exactly. But if you own a casita, you simply pack up your deployable home, load your rack of kitchen, and move to a city where the economic demand is higher. It severs the geographical trap of poverty.
That is unbelievable. They even reframe a heavy-duty speaker, the stump, as entertainment infrastructure. It's not for playing music at a tailgate. It's for hosting a community gathering around a fire rather than renting out an expensive corporate event space.
Right.
So what does this all mean? By framing these physical products as compounding economic assets tools that actively make you money and reduce your reliance on systems, they are bridging the gap between their philosophical manifesto and a highly profitable commercial reality.
They are so committed to this that they are even building a physical campus in New Mexico called Prosperity Place.
Prosperity Place.
Yeah, it's designed as a physical transition zone, a place where people can go to learn these AI skills, test these deployable living systems, and actively transition into this sovereign lifestyle alongside a reinforcing community.
Wow.
It fundamentally redefines what a purchase is. When you buy from Timber, according to this memo, you aren't buying camping equipment. You are buying the means of production. You are buying your literal way out of the despair economy.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want you, the listener, to really think about the massive journey we just took through this memo. We started with a scathing critique of a $40,000 welfare delta and a safety net that catches people but refuses to elevate them.
Right.
We explored how artificial intelligence is acting as a massive, unprecedented bypass around the traditional institutional gatekeepers that used to hold people back. And we ended up looking at how a deployable living system and a mobile grill are being designed to free you from commercial leases and 30-year mortgages.
It's a lot to take in.
It's a compelling, deeply provocative vision of the future. It forces you to ask yourself a hard question. Are you sitting in the back seat waiting on an institution to give you permission to succeed, or are you utilizing the incredible tools available right now to get behind the wheel and build your own compounding assets?
That is the ultimate challenge of the memo. But there is a final lingering paradox that I want to leave you to mull over, something the author entirely glosses over.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if Mike Isaacs's vision comes true, and everyone successfully uses AI and mobile kitchens to become a totally self-sufficient, sovereign solo entrepreneur, if everyone actively refuses to be an employee or be administered by a massive organization, who exactly is going to staff the highly complex institutions required to maintain this lifestyle?
Oh, that's a great point.
Right. Who is working in the massive factories required to build the physical microchips? Yeah. Who is laying the thousands of miles of undersea fiber optic cables? Who is maintaining the energy-hungry server farms that power the very AI this entire decentralized sovereign revolution relies upon?
That is the ultimate catch-22, isn't it? You can use your C-suite in a pocket to escape into the woods and run your sovereign catering business from a deployable living system, but only as long as someone else is still willing to sit in the back seat, clock in at the utility company, and keep the cellular towers running.
Exactly.
It turns out, whether you are trying to survive in the wilderness or survive in the modern economy, the pitch is always a lot cleaner than the reality of setting up the camp. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.